Hi, this is Bill Black from the Exit Coach Radio Show on Sundays. Last year, a business owner friend of mine died suddenly and tragically, and his family was unprepared. In his honor, I'm giving away 1,000 of my ebooks entitled Business Continuity, 5 Steps to Protect Your Family, free. All you have to do is text the word FAMILY to 44222. That's FAMILY to 44222. Don't let your family be the victim of an unplanned business. Text FAMILY to 44222 for this free information today.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today. You know, we talk a lot about how business owners can prepare for the exit from their business, and that means turning a complicated business asset into liquid wealth. Of course, people who are wealthy don't keep it all liquid. They reinvest in other different types of properties. It could be real estate, it could be illiquid investments of all types, and they build up this pile of wealth. And then it comes time when they say, okay, someday we're going to pass away. We need to plan to continue the what we've built up in perpetuity and pass it on to the next generation. Of course, you have all kinds of enemies out there. You have taxes, you have creditors and predators. And joining us today is Roy Williams from the Williams Group. And his firm, the Williams Group, prepares affluent families and heirs for successful wealth transitions. It's not as easy as you might think. There's a 70% failure rate of estate plans. And Roy's going to talk about the steps that high net worth and ultra net worth families must take to reduce or eliminate this tragedy. Roy, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
And Bill, thank you very much. And also, I want to thank you for caring. Jeff Verdun, who's a lawyer, who's a friend of yours, is also a caring lawyer. And he told me that you care, and it shows up daily in your shows. And so I want to thank you, and Jeff also, who's very caring. Thank you for asking me to participate. And our coaches call me almost weekly and say, thank you for letting me do God's work. So I want you to know that caring is a large component of what we do. Okay? So thank you for
that. Thank you, Roy. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay? Roy, tell us about your background and the Williams Group and the work that you've been doing. It's fascinating. And we've talked, of course, individually, and you have some great stories. We only have 20 minutes, but I'd love to hear more about your background and how you got started on this path.
Well, thanks, Bill. Most of my life has been in sports and working. I played football in high school, college, and the 49ers. My son Eric played in the NFL for 10 years. He won a Super Bowl ring in Super Bowl 26. My grandson Kyle played 3 years with the Seahawks. And my youngest son played professional basketball for 5 years. My eldest son played college basketball on scholarship. So my entire life has been being on and building teams. And the number one lesson that I learned was building trust by being reliable and collaborating with teammates who all had roles to take to develop the mission and the goals and work together to fulfill the mission. My professional life was a natural step to team building. I did not know that all these years of training was a gift from God. Because of all the mistakes we made, helped us grow and learn, and it was truly a gift. And I've been married for 57 years to the light of my life and the wind beneath our wings. We have three sons, 8 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. So we have lots of things going in the world. Okay?
That's a phenomenal background. Roy, you told me at one point about there was a turning point when in your post-athlete career, and you realized that people weren't asking the right questions. You decided it was time to get out and ask the right questions.
Well, my accountant suggested I go into the estate and financial planning business. I got injured my beginning of my second year in the 49ers, and they said, don't sell products, solve problems. My question was, what problems? I took many tax institutes, summer classes at Harvard Law School, USC, Miami Tax Institute early on, and we kept hearing about the short sleeve problem all over the world. And how could this occur? So I went to my mentor, Ed Hallback, the dean of the law school at Berkeley, Jim Kasner, their Harvard number one professor at Harvard, and they said, Roy, it happens. There's a 70% failure rate once the heirs receive it or trusts receive it. And so we spent the next 20 years asking this question, why is this occurring? And we interviewed 2,500 families as to why there was a 70% failure rate. And those 2,500, took me 20 years, the number one issue was a breakdown of trust and communication within the family unit. And number two issue was an unprepared heirs for accountability and responsibility. And the number three issue was a lack of purpose and mission. Those three factors constituted 95% of the reason that the estates were failing. And so, gee, we said, now we have the secret to the universe. I want you to know, now you try to answer, what is trust? Well, I went back to the University of the California School of Professional Psychology, where I got my PhD, and asked them, what is trust? And they could define trust for me, but they could define the benefits of trust or the problems with no trust, but no one could define trust. The same way with communication. I went to law schools and all my mentors. Nobody could define communication. How do you develop passion in the heirs? How do you develop and create incentive? We had a young man, 21 years old, say, Mr. Williams, my grandfather put stock of his company in trust when I was born, and now that I'm 21, I've got $20 million in the bank, and I get $2 million a year. Why do I need to work? How do you develop a purpose if you don't have the common values? We spent another 10 years developing a process to be able to identify and measure the core issues every family has so that the family could address them. I spent 15 years as a trustee for the California School of Professional Psychology and got my honorary doctorate there because of our 30 years of work. We published 5 books and developed a process to help families build their values, their mission, and purpose based upon solid data. This was when we developed the family values with everybody, mom, dad, kids, spouses, and grandchildren. It was the first time, almost 100% of the time, that family had ever articulated the common values that they held as a family. And we have our track record. Recorder put it on an easel that's 8 to 10 feet long and 4 feet high. And when families see their common values, it's mind blower. And then they can begin to develop a mission based upon those values. Because if they don't use their values, it'll never hold up long term. Okay?
That's so incredible. So getting it all up. Getting it all out from everyone and creating that sounds like incredibly sensitive and difficult work. So you literally get families, different generations all together to do all this type of work? Is that the trick?
The process is that mom, dad, all the kids, all spouses, and grandchildren over 16 or great-grandchildren over 16 and their spouses. Okay, so that, yes, we use everybody's in the room at the same time so that we can begin to have communication, and we can begin to have distinctions. For example, we had a family where Dad says, I like Roy's idea of putting $1 million in each one of your accounts, and on monthly we'll work with the money managers and investment advisors, and quarterly report back to the family, and at the end of the year we'll split the profits. Well, then we went to lunch, and after lunch I said, how many here heard Dad make a promise to put $1 million in each one of your accounts? There were four kids, four spouses, and mom and dad, so 10 people in the room. Four people raised their hand. I said, Dad, was that your intention of making an offer or a promise? He said, no, it was a speculation, and I was hoping we'd talk about it at lunch, and nobody mentioned it. I said, had I not mentioned that question, four of you would have convinced the other four and mom that Dad broke his promise again. And they all said, you're right. Okay? And so the question is, what are the skills? If we can't even, these were all college graduates, bright kids, and their spouses were bright people. How do we, if we don't even know how to make a clear request or an offer, how do we communicate? And those are the kind of things we begin to develop within the family. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you begin to see the level of trust and communication becomes excellent with the family. Gossip, which is an example of insincerity in a family, disappears.
And I can imagine when you first get started, it must be difficult to get families to open up and be transparent. Does that take several sessions? I mean, it must be probably different from each type of family that you work with, but generally, is it difficult?
It's difficult, but the problem is they just need the tools to be able to have a conversation, just like the tool I just gave you. Another one is if your wife said, honey, the trash needs emptying, would you empty the trash? In most cases, people would have heard a request. The fact is, she didn't make a request. She made a declaration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds trivial, but go back to the example I gave you earlier about the investment. There was a declaration. It wasn't a request. And so how do we have a clear request and use this as an example? And people began to develop tools and new ways of working together. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So exploring and trying to figure out what's going to work, of course, comes from years and years of mastery of having interactions with different types of families in different situations and being able to quickly assess that. Why is it that with all of the advisors, professional lawyers and estate planners and financial advisors that these families must have at their disposal, why is it that there's still a 70% failure rate? Does it boil down to the things that you just mentioned, trust and mission and purpose, and those aren't addressed?
Yeah, well, the facts are, just think about it. When they say we're going to do estate planning, okay, what does estate mean? It means financial assets in most cases, okay? And so they say, let's use strategy and structure, governance, preservation, and tax reductions in order to maximize the assets to whoever we're going to send it, trust, foundation, family, whatever the case may be. The problem is, it's all necessary. At the same time, what is also critically needed is the focus on the other half of the assets, the family, preparing the receivers to handle the gifts. Okay?
Okay.
And so the heirs need to know what roles are going to be needed, what role mm-hmm. they want to fulfill. There are hundreds of roles, and most of the heirs do not know what they are until they participate in the process we developed or a lawyer tells them when mom and dad die. What a terrible time to begin to prepare yourself for roles when you don't even know they exist.
Good point. Okay? Very good point.
And so, so that's where, you know, that's where that is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're right. There's so many things in life that are much better addressed if you go in prepared, and that would certainly be one of those things. If you all of a sudden you find out that something has happened and your life's going to change and you've done nothing to prepare for that change, it's very difficult. So, Roy, speaking of that, when a family works with the Williams Group, what's the most significant change that you see in those families after they've worked with you? What are some of the things that happen?
Well, what some of the things that happen are, number one, they have trust and communication bridges that they've never had before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The gossip and focus just disappears. The family has a compass of values and mission to guide their family for generations. We had a granddaughter, 13 years old, come to her grandfather and say, "Grandpa, I don't think we should do this on our foundation." He said, "Why not?" She said, "It's not going to take us to our mission." Well, the mission was developed before she was even born. But she took it on her own to go back and read and listen to it and say, "Okay, I don't see this taking us to where we're going as our mission." And so he said, "Honey, I think you're right." She said, "Well, then why are we doing it?" And he said, "We're not going to, because you took the time and energy to show me that we were going in the wrong direction." He said, "She grew right in front of me."
Mm-hmm.
So those
That's
are the
spectacular.
Kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, the estate plans are clear and issues versus fair versus equal disappear. Many times we see, when you look at the values and mission and compare it to the wills and documents, there's conflicts between the two. One's talking about money, and the other's talking about values, and no one is addressing those until we look at them. Okay?
Yes.
So then trust becomes deeper and deeper within the family members, and the family members begin to see roles that they can take and the qualification and performance standards that are required to fulfill them. What a difference that makes in their lives.
Yeah, Roy, you're so on target here. We're talking about communication issues, and if you just join us, I'm talking with Roy Williams of the Williams Group, and the Williams Group prepares affluent families and heirs for successful wealth transitions. I know, Roy, you've worked with some of the a lot of names that we would all recognize. Big family names out there, and you've made a difference in so many ways. And as you said earlier, you've written five books. Roy's written five books and co-authored two books, and they're all available on Amazon. Preparing Heirs, Five Steps to a Successful Transition of Family Wealth and Values, and Philanthropy, Heirs and Values, How Successful Families Are Using Philanthropy to Prepare Their Heirs for Post-Transition Responsibilities. And if you go to the Williams Group website at www.thewilliamsgroup.org, again, that's thewilliamsgroup.org, you can obtain more information, and there is a 10-question quiz, and you'll be surprised at the questions and your answers. Right, Roy?
Yes.
You did this with a friend of mine, a very well-to-do friend of mine, and he was shocked when he finished those questions and said, "Nobody's ever asked me these questions before." So, listeners, you need to go to thewilliamsgroup.org and check out those questions. And you can also reach Roy at 949-940-9140. Roy, we have just scratched the surface today, but our time's up, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing the work you're doing. It's fantastic and amazing.
Good. Okay, well, Bill, thank you very much for the time and energy that you've had. There were lots of things I could say even more on, but time is, money.
We'll do it again. I would love to have you on again. I think we said, we've just scratched the surface of this topic of wealth transfer. We want to change that 70% failure rate and move that needle. So, Roy, thanks again. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
Hey, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from Exit Coach Radio here on AM 830. You know, one of the biggest questions I get from the show is what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? I always tell people the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know, and you can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. Do it right now. Text exit plan to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio. For Exit Coach Radio, I'm Spike Reel. Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a special treat today. We have three individuals joining us from Golden State Foods and the GSF Foundation. And we're going to talk about the mission and the vision and Golden State Foods Foundation and what they're doing both globally and locally. And we're also going to talk with each of the individuals about a special event that's coming up in just a few weeks here in Orange County. So I'm going to bring on the three individuals from Golden State Foods. They are Shelley Fry, John Page, and Annalisa Lukes. And I'm going to bring them on right now, and we're going to first welcome you all to the show. Thanks so much for joining us. Say hello one at a time. Shelley?
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good, Shelley. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And we also have Annalisa. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi, this is Annalisa. Good morning.
Hi, it's a pleasure to meet you. And John, you're with us as well?
Hi, Bill. This is John. How are you?
Hi. Great, John. Thanks very much. If you could, give us a little background on each of you. Where are you from and how did you get to Golden State Foods? Let's start with you, Shelley.
Okay, well, thank you. Happy to. So I'm originally from the OC right here in Orange County, although I've lived in Utah, New York, and France at various times throughout my life. I earned my undergrad and graduate degrees in communications at Brigham Young University in Utah, where I also taught as a professor in the School of Communications for several years. Prior to GSF, I served in a variety of communications roles for a number of different organizations, including the 2002 Salt Lake Olympic Organizing Committee, Touchstone Software, and Fieldbrook Productions. I also freelanced a number of years as a magazine writer and a book author. And then I came to GSF in 2002, right after the Olympics, as the Director of Corporate Communications, which was a newly created position at the time. And I now serve as the Vice President of Corporate Communications, overseeing all of the internal and external communications for the company. So that's me.
That's terrific. It's a great background, a very giving background. You've spent a lot of time in helping, it sounds like. And Annalisa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I was born in the Philippines and immigrated to the United States in Los Angeles right around the age of 13 or so with my family. And my background is in law and in business. So I earned both a JD and an MBA. And my passion, I say and rather than but, and my passion is really using whatever I can to help people particularly helping people help others. It really is something that I enjoy thoroughly. So prior to coming to Golden State Foods in 2015, I fundraised quite a bit for organizations in Orange County in the areas of affordable housing, legal services, and also renewable energy. And I've also managed and run an office with regard to renewable energy and had responsibility for making sure that the office ran well over 5 different counties. So coming to GSF as the executive director of the foundation is a thrill because it enables me to gather together all the different skills and use whatever God-given talent I might have to help our company engage our people and give back to the community through our foundation.
That's fantastic. And I look forward to hearing about that. We're going to talk about the foundation in just a second, but first, let's get to know you a little bit, John. How about you and your background, and how'd you come to GSF?
Well, absolutely. Well, apparently, as you can see, I work with Shelley and Annalisa, and I'm happy to, and that's one of the things that attracted me to Golden State Foods are the people and their ethos and their passion for the community. I came to Golden State Foods 12 years ago by way of New York, New Jersey. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. And then, as Annalisa said, I immigrated to California in terms of the work and the opportunity. By profession, I'm a lawyer. I'm the senior vice president and chief corporate social responsibility officer and chief legal officer for Golden State Foods, and have been in this role for 12 years. Born and raised in Brooklyn to a single mom on government assistance who did not finish college, but later on went back and got her associate's degree. So in me and in my heart has always been about education and children and families in need, which we focus on. As you said, Annalisa, we'll talk about the foundation later on in that regard. But really, Golden State Food is both a company who's determined to be a company of enterprise, but also a company of ethos and personality. And I like what we do for the community, which we're going to talk about somewhat today. Also, Golden State Foods also has blessed me in taking this job with being able to be chairman of the board of Tuskegee University, which is in Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama. So the reach and touch of Golden State Foods, its influence in the people, including the people on this phone, is more than just Southern California. It's actually globally, if not, and certainly nationwide.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. And, you know, for our listeners out there, Golden State Foods, you may or may not know of Golden State Foods, but they're one of the largest diversified suppliers to the food service industry. You've eaten their food. I can guarantee you they provide services to more than 125,000 restaurants and stores from its 45-plus locations on 5 continents. So I understand that your company makes a pretty good hamburger. Okay, but among other things. But Shelley, tell us a little bit more about Golden State Foods and its history and what the company does.
Sure. Happy to, Bill. Thanks. So Golden State Foods began in 1947 in Los Angeles. So we're actually just about to turn 70 next year, and we're very excited about that. We're going to celebrate big. But as you said, we're one of the largest diversified suppliers to the food service industry, and we service hundreds of leading brands in 60 countries on 5 continents, so all over the world. And, you know, approximately 125,000 restaurants and stores, so we have global reach. Our core businesses include the processing of liquid products, protein products, produce, dairy, and we operate a full-line distribution service all over the country and in selected parts of the world. And as has already been mentioned, we also operate the nonprofit charity, the GSF Foundation, which you'll hear more about in a few minutes. But we pride ourselves in being a values-based company with really proven performance in quality, innovation, and customer service. We're headquartered in Irvine, California, and we employ about 6,500 associates around the world.
And I've been to your headquarters, and it's apparent once you walk in that this is a very different corporate headquarters, focusing on a creed and values. And, John, tell us how that plays out every day at Golden State Foods.
Well, you know, one of the things that makes it tough in business is bringing your judgment to bear on various decisions, whether it's a transaction, whether it's a personnel matter, or whether it's a new engagement. But if you have a filter, creed, and values, which we have, which, as you know, we actually have on the back of all of our business cards. It's part of what we share with our associates when they begin. It's on the walls globally and in the world, in Egypt, throughout the world, and here in the United States. And what that value does is it gives us a foundation. It allows us then to have other pillars where we focus on people, where we focus on finances, where we focus on social responsibility, safety, security. But the foundation are our creed and values, where we start out by saying we believe in God and the dignity of all people. And the key there is not only just God and the belief that we have, but also people. And that's what you'll find our greatest assets in this company are people. So throughout that creed and the values of treating others as you want to be treated, the golden rule, it allows me even as a lawyer that when you come to a place and you have your judgment and you have your intellect and your skills, you add this filter, you usually come out on the right side of the answer. And so that's in most decisions we use that. And sometimes when you find yourself adrift, you go back to that foundational aspect and you say, wait a minute, is this within our creed and within our values? Is this who we want to be? Is this how I want to be treated? And uniformly, you arrive at a better decision, if not the best, by doing that and using that as a filter.
I can imagine that makes a difference with your associates, your customers, and your community. Can you comment a little bit about that, John, about how that having that as a reference point makes a difference across the board with everyone?
Absolutely. It's in your statement, as you say, when you walk in the office, we're different. We don't want to be different. We are who we are. But in this world of a little bit of confusion, we want to be predictable. And how we are is what our creed and values say. So therefore, what it gives many of our customers who I believe align with us, not only because of our values and our creed, but because of the operational excellence that Shelley spoke of, but because it's predictable. They know that we're going to help them innovate. They know we're going to stand by our values. We're going to stand by independent businesses, you know, as you read the rest of the creed and as it goes on, and that we stand for something, and that we don't think so much of ourselves that we've done it all by ourselves. In fact, in our creed and values, we talk about their success as being our success, and we truly believe that when we come to most of the equations in our business settings. So for our clients, they view that as both a value add and a commitment to their excellence, which all of us win, and it's the triple win there. They win, we win, and our associates win. So I think our clients like that. We've been able to grow since I've been here in 2004, and it's because of the operational excellence, our ethos, our commitment to our customers, and being invited into new markets because of how we align with them.
Not to make our listeners hungry, but the management great Peter Drucker said, "Culture eats strategy for lunch." So apparently, when you start off with the culture, it filters down all throughout the community what you do and how you do it and who you do it for. Annalisa, what's impacted you the most about the values of your company?
I think what's impacted me the most is what attracted me the most, which is the first line of the creed. We believe in God and the dignity of all people. And I think everything else stems from that. I think the values are aligned with that initial statement. And I find that to be a differentiator. I travel quite a bit all over the country to visit our folks all over the United States. And one thing that really has touched me is the fact that the creed and values are in every single facility, no matter where we are, whether it's in Seattle, whether it's in Miami. That is one thing that really unites us together. And so it's impacted me personally because it's what attracted me to it, but it also has enabled me to affirm that it was a great decision because it's something that I see everywhere I go all over the country.
That's fantastic. And that, again, that culture is permeates everything. They might speak different languages. It might be in different types of facilities, but that culture is a blanket over everything. Now, let's talk about that because you have a Golden State Foods has an employee-run and funded charitable organization, the GSF Foundation. Tell us a little bit about its mission and what you're doing lately to help those in need, Annalisa.
The GSF Foundation's mission is to improve the lives of children and families in need wherever GSF associates live and work. So that means it's not just a national foundation, it's really a global foundation. A lot of our focus right now is in the United States. So we have 28 committees that have chairs and committee members who are giving their time above and beyond their day jobs to help us achieve and further that mission of helping children and families in need wherever we live and work. And we do this work a number of ways. One is through grant making, and the other one is through programs. We give away bicycles, backpacks, shoes, and we also give funds to 501c3 nonprofits that provide direct services to children and families in need. One thing that's unique about the foundation is, as you mentioned, it is operated by our people. They own it. And that's a message that I share with them every time I go out. This is your foundation. I want to hear your voices. I want to hear your ideas. And let's make your dreams come true so that we can help the kids and families in need make their dreams come true. The mission is really something that has resonated throughout the community as well, and it's very well accepted wherever we are. Now, one thing that we have been developing over the past year is something that's tied to who we are as a food company. And so we decided that it is essential for us to develop a food program because this is a realm that we work in. So come November, November 17 to be exact, we are launching an event called Feeding Hunger, a No Lunch Lunch, in our Garner, North Carolina facility, because we learned that 1 in 5 children in the United States today are hungry, and they don't know where they're going to get their next meal. And this is just one way for us as a foundation to give back to the community. We will raise awareness, raise some money, and 100% of dollars raised through this lunch event is going back to the community. So again, this is aligned with what we do as a foundation. We raise money, a lot of which is from our associates, and then we give it back to the community with the ideas and the voices of our associates. Phenomenal.
That is phenomenal, and I applaud you for those efforts. It makes tremendous sense, and it has tremendous impact wherever you are helping. And a lot of companies, a lot of our listeners are mature companies who are saying, you know, we should do more. We should get involved. We should help our communities. John, can you give us a little bit of a sense from the top outlook here? How does helping others outside of the company in turn help the company's image?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think what it does, it becomes both that differentiator. And as you may well know, Bill, that the millennials and the different generations, they have diverse viewpoints. And sometimes they select companies by not who they are, but what they do and what they do, not in terms of what they make. And so we've decided long ago, I think, you know, decades ago, but now you have a name for it. It's called social responsibility, to be about the community, to do the work that Annalisa just mentioned and what Shelley referenced earlier. So that image, while it's important, not for image's sake, it's really important because it allows us to attract top talent, diverse talent. And then once they're here, we get the best thinking, the best leadership, the best products, the best innovation. And we think because of how we decided to be, we are able to attract a cadre of talent for that reason. So when you think about the other companies that focus on the bottom line, what we would like for them to do in concert with us, because we want a better society, a better economy, is to focus on what we call the triple bottom line, which is people, profit, and planet. And I think with that, it's okay to be a profitable enterprise, but you also got to think of how do you perpetuate that by preserving assets and resources for future generations. So that's image, in that sense, you know how to Sprite commercial, obey your thirst, and our thirst is to make sure that others are thinking about how to be better. And that's why we have such programs as the foundation, our CSR programs, diversity, our community programs, because we want to attract the best talent and do for our communities where we live and work. And we found through our surveying of our associates internally, they like it, and this is what they want to do, and they're happier, they're more productive, and they're committed to staying with us. Where you see people leaving jobs after 2 or 3 months or even after a year, we've given them a sustaining principle of being able to do well for communities.
You know, I kind of see the pattern here of today, especially you mentioned millennials, and a lot of people are saying, you know, I'd like to come work for you. I'd like to know what you will pay me, but I also want to know even more, what do we stand for? And I can just picture in your organization a new hire getting not only a packet that tells them about the 401k, but about the foundation and what we're doing together to make the world a better place. And that's so on the mark for how companies need to be thinking these days.
Absolutely. We try to show them in very creative fashion, you know, that we're a company that's already spent over $36 million in 12 years for the good of the community, that we have over 66% diverse population, women and minorities, in a global company that Shelley gave you the numbers. And, you know, unlike Silicon Valley, which is trying to struggle to figure out how to include people, not only have we gone for diversity, but we've figured out how to use inclusion to our advantage by promoting and retaining the right people so that, guess what, we could win as a company so we could do better for our communities. So you're absolutely right. We use that as both a lead and a pull to bring folks aboard. And if that's focused on image, then that's what we'll focus on.
Now, we just have a couple minutes left, but I understand that you're the presenting sponsor of the upcoming 7-pillar Influence for Good recognition next month. Can you share why you decided to support that event, Shelley?
Yes, I'm happy to. We are so excited to be sponsoring this first annual event, which we're sure will be very, very special. We at GSF enjoy partnering with like-minded organizations that share and reward our common values of integrity, respect, giving back to the community, as you just heard from John and Annalisa. And, of course, we always talk about servant-style leadership at the company. So we had partnered with the Passkeys organization in the past and truly trusted their leadership, their area of focus, and their commitment to quality and integrity. And so with the Institute for Influential Community Impact, which is an initiative of Passkeys, we particularly appreciated how they're really leveraging community leaders in a wide variety of organizations to help move everyone forward. So we know that everyone who attends the 7-pillar event on November 2nd will be in for a huge treat. So we're very excited for this event. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you know, there are movements happening in communities that are trying to bring together all of the factions of that community, whether it's government or education or religion or other areas that nonprofits and the needs of the community, and help people understand what all those needs are all in one place. Because a lot of times we get together to do good, but we do it in kind of a silo, and we don't know that, hey, you know, what we do here might benefit this other group over there. So you guys are right in the heart of one of the best things that's happening. I'm really, really impressed and proud for all that you've done at Golden State Foods and GSF's foundation and what's going on there. And again, I want to thank my guests, Shelley Fry, John Page, and Annalisa Lukes, for coming on and really telling us how GSF, Golden State Foods, is leading the way in really getting their hands around how do we help, how do we we want to be a profitable organization, but we also want to help, and we want that to be what we're known for. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. It's been a real pleasure to have you. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after I click all these buttons. We'll be right back after this. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from Exit Coach Radio here on AM 830. You know, one of the biggest questions I get from the show is what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? I always tell people the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know, and you can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. Do it right now. Text exit plan to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio. For Exit Coach Radio, I'm Spike Reel. Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Hey, welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure when we have guests come back on and tell us what they're up to. This next guest is a friend of mine. I'd like to call him a friend. He's an associate through a group called BEI. We both are very strong advocates of exit planning. And he's created some interesting tools and techniques for you business owners out there. So pay attention. His name is John Deeney, and he's with a company called the Exit Map out of San Antonio, Texas. John, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure. John, I know that we've talked in the past about your devotion to helping business owners find their way from a frightened, confused business owner wondering, what the heck, how do I get out of this thing, this thing that's got me working so hard, and turn it into a lifestyle so that I can enjoy myself. But tell us a little bit about what brought you to creating the Exit Map, a little bit about your background.
Sure, sure. Well, as you know, Bill, I come from business ownership. I'm not, although I have a couple of degrees, I was never a CPA or an attorney or a financial planner. I owned and operated a manufacturing company, a distribution company, began consulting and coaching owners about 20 years ago, and saw a lot of these issues that you talk about every single day. And I was laughing, I was smiling here when you said, you know, the owners that are afraid and confused. Those don't worry me half as much as the ones that think they have it all figured out and don't, you know.
Right.
They're even more frightening, you know. So, you know, when I joined BEI and I had started doing exit planning and didn't even know that's what it was. I had started working with owners to help them prepare. And about, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago now, I came across BEI and said, oh my goodness, somebody actually has a process for doing this. And I started, you know, I certified with BEI, and I started working with owners. But the reason for the exit map, which was your initial question, was not enough people focus on the operations. Yes, it's tax planning. Yes, it's financial planning. It's retirement planning. But the money has to come from somewhere, and the money comes from the company. And if the company's not ready to sell, all the tax planning in the world isn't going to help. So the exit is a tool that gets the advisors and the owners to look at a broader picture of what's involved. It asks more questions about management, sales trends, revenue trends, the types of things that are going to determine what kind of multiple you get, whether you sell to a third party or internally, and how much you're going to be able to walk away with.
And why do you think it is, John, that so many business owners don't get that? They don't understand that the business is going to be the source of the capital for repayment ultimately, one way or the other. So many people I talk to, they just don't seem to get it. Why do you think
and as you know, you've seen some of my presentations on the boomers, and my book on beating the boomer bust. For a whole ton of reasons, which we don't have a couple hours to go into, boomer owners identify unusually strongly with their businesses. There is a psychological barrier to thinking about life without the business, because the business has become their identity. And what they don't realize is for the generations before and after them, that was not the case. The business was the business. It wasn't me. But boomers do have a high correlation between who I am as a person and what I do. And so that's one of the reasons they put it off. The other one is, I think, a general expectation that if I worked hard at this for 25 or 30 years and built it up to where it's providing me with a very comfortable living, then of course it's going to fund my retirement. And it may not be that easy, that slam dunk. It may not. I mean, we're working with an owner right now, has purchased a lot of real estate, has built the company very nicely, has a bunch of employees, and you know, we started out and he said, well, I feel very comfortable that this, you know, we'll be fine, we'll be just terrific. And as I do and you do as well, I had him go to a certified financial planner and get his retirement projections drawn up, and the planner came back and said, well, yeah, you can retire at 65, but you're going to be penniless by the time you're 74. And that's not good news. Also gives us as exit planners a bit of a challenge. But
was that assumption, John, based on the projected current sale value of the business after taxes?
No, we did it.
Was that
we
what
did
they
it
were
without
looking?
The business. We did
oh,
it without
the
business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he didn't think he needed proceeds from the business. He's now finding out that how much he sells his business for is going to be the critical factor in a comfortable retirement,
mm-hmm.
where he thought it would be a non-issue. So, you know, sometimes it's ignorance. Sometimes it's a psychological fear of dealing with the issue. And as I said earlier, sometimes it's overconfidence. It's just this inherent belief that I've got a good company, ergo, someone must pay me enough for it.
Right. So what you did was you went out and you created a 15-minute online tool for business owners and their advisors so they could more effectively discuss their preparedness for exit. Tell us a little bit about how the exit map process works.
Well, we had a couple criteria when we set out for this, and the issue I've seen is that too many of the, let's call them entry products, you know, for a client to engage in initially, are long and detailed. And let's face it, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not ashamed to say it. I chase squirrels. I have ADD and a short attention span. And asking a business owner to sit down and complete a three-hour questionnaire is not the road to success. So it needed to be online. It needed to be accessible and mobile. It needed to be short. And I've got some background and expertise in questionnaires. I really don't like the ones that say, I have enough money. My company will sell for enough money to fund my retirement. And they have no, probably, I think so, and definitely. Well, just because you check definitely doesn't mean you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it multiple choice, but with very objective, concrete answers. I know that my company will provide for me in retirement because I've had an appraisal done, I've had a retirement projection done, and if you haven't had those things done, you really don't know. So it's 15 minutes of checking the box, and then each question has five weighting factors that we do in the background. It's a pretty complex algorithm. We may have gone a little bit down the rabbit hole on that. So each report is unique. There are 20 questions. There are five possible responses to each of those, and there are 100 different answer sets for each of those responses. So every report that comes out is for you and your company, and you will see the references to exactly what you answered in every report.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm looking at one of your reports, and it talks about, first of all, it gives, as a business owner, you're looking at this and saying, okay, well, first it tells me overall am I prepared, and then it breaks down into financial preparedness, my planning preparedness, my revenue and profit preparedness, operations. Each one of these is on one page, which again, as you say, most business owners just love that. There's not pages and pages of difficult reading here.
Right,
it's
and
a
we
very
have
attractive
colors.
Analysis.
I was going to say,
yeah,
mention
they are
the pretty colors.
there are graphs with just a couple paragraphs in between each of the graphs. And again, the concept of this is to really, you say it's okay, but let's turn myths into facts, right? And then we can really focus on those areas that you need to focus on. Most business owners are so busy trying to, you know, just keep their business going and get it ready for whatever. They don't have time to spend a ton of time on this stuff. But this helps them get on the right track, John. And what happens when a business owner completes this? And what happens? Does their advisor get a copy as well? And do they review it together?
Yeah, the,
or what's the process?
One you're referring to is 12 pages long, the assessment. And that goes to both the advisor that asked them to take it and the business owner. And then it gives the opportunity, the owner, the opportunity to look it over and say whether or not there's anything that he's particularly concerned about. I mean, if he scores really well and he feels he has a long runway to his exit, he says, okay, well, there's nothing we have to worry about now. Maybe his CPA told him to take it. He says, well, you know, we can talk about it next year. If he sees some things in there that would benefit from planning, and most people do, because most businesses would benefit from planning in some area, then he talks to the advisor and he says, let's get together. The report, the assessment is always free to the business owner. The advisor, if he wants to debrief the business owner and go into depth, has the ability to buy a set, 2 40-page reports, one for him and one for the slightly different, and one for the client, where it goes into a full page of narrative on every single response the client gave, why it's important, what kind of things he should be thinking about, how urgent it is to start on this, how difficult it'll be to change it, and really gives them some details so they can do some serious planning around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. And then it also spells out, as you said, now that you know all this information, it'll be much easier for your advisor to work with you to help you prioritize those that you need to work on. Because as we all know, this concept of preparing your business for sale or transfer isn't just you just need to do these two things and you'll be all set. In most cases, there are multiple tasks that need to be taken on over a period of time. So
right.
You've told us the basics of when an advisor and owner review the map, what happens, who pays for it. Why do you think that business owners need this particular assessment, John, with your perspectives here?
Well, it's because of the operational aspects of it, I think, Bill. Most of the other assessments I've seen, the shorter ones, the ones that can be done in a reasonable amount of time, no aspersions on the insurance industry, but most of them have come out of the life insurance industry. And they're all life insurance type questions. You know, are you sure that your family will be secure? And then the operational ones, and there's a number of them. I know you're a practitioner of a value builder, John Warlow system. I know John well. You know, there's Mouse and some of the others. You know, and one, I won't say which one, and it's not the one you work with, says, we will take this assessment because it will bring you through 16 critical areas of your company and 147 key performance indicators. I mean, you lost about 75% of your business owners right there.
Right, exactly.
You know, you just can't do that much. You've got to give them an idea of operations. My sales have been steady for the last 5 years. Well, that might not be as good as you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Depends upon who you're hoping to sell to. You know, your employees may love the fact that you've had steady sales. I can tell you a private equity group has no interest in steady sales.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the kind of information that comes out of it.
Yeah. So this is something that, again, if you're focusing on your future and when, you know, what you might, what you think you might want to do, whether it's going to be accomplished or not by where you are and what you're doing. The exit map assessment and analysis is an outstanding tool to get that the information out in the open so you and your advisors can work on the appropriate things. John, can, if people don't have an advisor, can they come and just take the test online on their own at your website?
Yes, absolutely. They can go to, actually we have a new site set up, and you've got it there, Bill, for owners that has a lot of other stuff. It has, like, what do people look for in due diligence, and some of the BEI white papers that you and I both use. And that's at yourexitmap.com.
Got it. Okay, so your, Y-O-U-R, exitmap.com. And business owners, you can check that out. How long, you said, I think we said earlier, it takes, this is not going to take you all day long to do. This is going to take about,
no,
what, 15, 20 minutes?
15 minutes. It's 20 questions, multiple choice. It's actually 22 questions. We ask questions about your timing on the front end, because that affects a lot of the scoring of the difficulty and urgency of the other questions. But the actual questions about your business, there are 20 questions. We don't ask for a confidential financial information. We don't ask for anything that you wouldn't tell the guy sitting next to you on the airplane. They're just broad questions about where your company is and what's going on with it, and a little bit about where you are and you know what your plans are.
Well, John, it's a fantastic assessment that you've put together here, and I know it's going to help a lot of our listeners. So, again, if you're listening to this, go to www.yourexitmap.com and check out the assessment. Should advisors get in touch with you if they want to learn how they can get involved with this, John?
They can. I think I'm certain at the end of it we have a checkbox if you want somebody to get in touch with you, but you don't have to. You can just use it for yourself too.
Okay, so for owners, go to www.yourexitmap.com. For advisors, take a free test drive at www.exitmap.com. And John, what's next for the exit map? I know you never sit still very long. What else are you working on?
Well, I mentioned earlier, but I have an e-book out called Beating the Boomer Bust.
Yes.
I just did a rewrite, and I'm having it illustrated now. And it's about three times as long as it was. And we hope to have that out in the first quarter of next year. So that's the project of the moment.
And if you are a business owner-oriented group or organizer of a business or owner-oriented group, John Deany is an excellent speaker. He will keep your audience on the edge of their seats as they learn about a lot of the trends facing that have come about because of baby boomer business owners and information they need to know. So get in touch with John, and they can reach you. Can I give out your – why don't you tell us what's the best phone number
for
them to call?
Sure,
if they want to get in touch.
My speaker author, general ne'er-do-well site is John F. Deany, DINI.com.
John F. Deany, DINI.com. Well, John, thanks so much for joining us. It's always fascinating to hear what's going on in that mind of yours, and you're helping business owners. And, again, as I said, I've looked at and taken the assessment myself to see what it looks like, and I'm very, very impressed with it. I think it's going to do very well. So I wish you continued
success.
Well, thank
you, Bill. Thank you very much.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
Hey everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from Exit Coach Radio here on AM 830. You know, one of the biggest questions I get from the show is what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? I always tell people the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know, and you can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. Do it right now. Text exit plan to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio. For Exit Coach Radio, I'm Spike Reel. Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on exitcoachradio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.